Hi, I'm Susan Moore, Community Engagement Manager with IIBA.
And I'm Scott Bennett, Manager of Business Analysis with the International Institute of Business Analysis.
And this is Business Analysis Live.
What is requirements management? So we're digging right into business analysis, right into the core here. This is going to be an interesting session, I think, for most people.
Yeah, if you geek out about requirements management, and I can safely say that today's guest and I really do geek out about it, this is the topic for you, because this is how we make sure that our requirements live on and do what they were intended to do. So it's going to be deep dive.
So without further ado, please welcome our guest, Jen Bedell. Hello, Jen.
Hello, how are you guys?
Hey, good. Jen.
How are you?
Jen?
I'm good.
So for our viewers that aren't familiar with your name, you're a common speaker at conferences. Why don't you just give us a little bit of your background so they know who you are?
I'm a business analyst. Hey, look at that. I actually became a business analyst when I was about 3 years old and was looking for more efficient ways to hide the stuff in my room so that it looked clean. In reality, I got an official kind of IT role back in the 90s. So I've worked as a quality analyst, business analyst, change manager, scrum leader. I've done a little of everything. I've kind of worn a few hats over the years. Currently, I am managing the business analysis community for my company. And I'm also doing some consulting work as well. And for fun, because I geek out on this kind of stuff, in my spare time, I speak at conferences. I guess you'd say I'm international speaker at this point.
You are.
That's right. And I'll add one other thing, because you just can't get enough of business analysis in your life. You are also a deputy regional director for the America's Northeast region for what we call the GCC. It's kind of the general council of all of the chapters, all of the IIBA chapters across the world. So you are a volunteer. So thank you so much for doing that. That's a really important role.
Yeah.
And it's also fun. I get to meet with other people and learn from them. And
I had an opportunity to meet Jen in Toronto at the BA World Conference. And I got to hear Jen speak for the very first time. And if you haven't heard Jen speak, she's a fantastic speaker, very engaging. So I encourage you to check that out. She is speaking at BBC this year. Yes. So Jen, what's the topic that you're talking about?
It is on mentoring. It's on the Friday, and without the calendar in front of me, I can't remember, which is why I geek over documenting and things like that.
Yeah.
So if you've never been to a BBC, it's definitely worth the travel to get there to participate in. The energy that I felt last year being there was just fantastic. It's you can't replace that by doing something online. Okay, so let's dig into this topic, Jen. We talked a little bit earlier about where to find requirements. So this is a good spot to start on this topic.
Sure. Nope, there's none laying around here. So I guess we're going to have to do some digging. Where do we find requirements? We can find them pretty much anywhere. And if you think you found all of them, there's probably more to find. We usually start with reviewing documentation, especially if you're new on a project, looking at regulations, talking to stakeholders, using all of those techniques that we use to draw out information, interviewing, job shadowing, surveys. All of these things are giving us the information that we need to understand the business needs so that we can then document those business requirements.
Yeah, it's interesting when you really start to think about all those different areas where you can get requirements from. You know, when I was new and doing my business analysis career, I was always thinking, well, I have to talk to a person. But there are so many other areas that you can learn about things.
Definitely, definitely. I know the client that that I was working on a few years ago, I had joined the team, and within 2 weeks, I had a bunch of some process things and some requirements written out. And she said, "Well, who did you meet with?" I said, "Well, you gave me this document. You got all that out of that one document?" Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what you can find just when you focus, when you know what you're looking for. And I think in the beginning, we don't always know what we're looking for. So what do we do then is go back and validate, what's the purpose of this project? What is the goal here? What are we trying to achieve? That helps you identify, okay, here's the information I need to look for. And you know what? I might find information not relevant to this, but it might be relevant to something else. So, I mean, hold on to it, but we want to stay focused on the goal of this particular project.
Yeah, that's the important part of identifying the requirements, is also knowing what isn't the requirement, whether you are bouncing it up against your scope or bouncing it up against something else. So understanding what is part of what you're working on and what isn't, that is a whole other set of skills that you need to have for finding those requirements.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And even helping the stakeholders recognize the difference between this is a need and this is a want. Mm-hmm. Right? Nice to have versus critical. Because if we start accepting all of their nice to haves, it's going to take longer to get their criticals.
So once you've gone through and you've found all the requirements, then it's about organizing those requirements, right? So how do we put them together in a meaningful way? How do we group them together? It really is about working with stakeholders and making sure that we've covered everything off, right? So are there techniques that you use to do this? Is it a mindset that you need to be able to do this?
It's a little of both, I would say. And first of all, I just want to clarify, because I don't think you intended to say this, but you said once you find all of the requirements, right? We're going to start organizing them as soon as we have some, right? Because we want to make sure that we can keep control of this. So what I will tend to do initially is identify what other things do I need to track with my requirements. Whether I've got a requirements tool or not, I want to track the status of this requirement. I want to track where it came from. Who is my main contact if I have more questions about this requirement? How can I categorize it? And this is the key for me. I have difficulty seeing a big, long list of hundreds of items and being able to find what I'm looking for. If I can find a way to categorize them, then I've got I might have 10 smaller lists of 10 rather than one big list of 100. So if I don't have a tool, my favorite go-to is SharePoint. If I don't have access to SharePoint, then a nice fallback is Excel. But ideally, we have a way to manage these somewhere centrally so that everybody who needs access to that can see it. BAs should never be storing things on their desktop or laptop or in a notepad. I do have my notepad, but that's my temporary spot. The details need to be documented in the requirements. All the discussions about the requirements should all be documented somewhere that everyone can see them.
Yeah, you make a really good point, Jen, about sort of categorizing as you're going along, because you could sort of step into an area and realize, oh, there's a whole gap area here we never even considered as part of it. So yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I have been known to change the categories. As like, I might think, oh, wow, this category is too big. Right now we need to split this down a bit.
Yeah,
I think that idea of treating your requirements like data makes a lot of sense, because especially as you are talking to different people or doing different forms of analysis, being able to put that somewhere where you can structure them And that's really kind of the way I think about it. Very often we will get requirements and put them into unstructured formats, like a Word document, for example. But if you can structure them, then you can start to see across, where do I have duplicates? Where do I have gaps? Where do I have things that conflict with each other? And so things like statuses, sources, categories give you the kind of information that make those that make your requirements easy to follow up on and to see what you have. So you and I started to geek out on using SharePoint for requirements management. I think it is a tool that is easily, most organizations have something like it, and it's pretty easy to configure a list to do what you want and give access to it. So so that's, listen, I'm all in.
Yeah. And I mean, I have a client who didn't have SharePoint, but had another tool that they were using, actually a project management tool, taking a couple hours to play around with it and seeing what kind of configuration can be done. I was able to figure out a way to manage requirements, and these are living requirements. These are backlogs that will live on. So it's, there's always a way.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. And, you know, you mentioned keeping requirements in documents that might be local to you. So there's also that element of transparency and giving people access to this. Sometimes we, I think we tend to hold those requirements close. They're not done, but choosing a tool that allows people to see what you're collecting, I think, can open up opportunities for more discussion as you are developing them.
Absolutely. A great example of that was just the other day. It might have even been yesterday. I've got my days mixed up. But I had somebody say, hey, there's a new legislation and we need X. While I was talking to that person, I'm putting the details into this tool. And I said, okay, this is what, I'm just putting the basic details in here from what you've told me. Please add comments, add more detail, and then we'll refine it and make sure that it's clear for everyone. But it becomes a collaboration rather than just a Jennifer thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The collaboration, I think, is the element that you can encourage, and the shared ownership of these things when you start to put it into a mechanism that people can have access to.
And an added bonus, and I know you have more questions, but I'm geeking out over this now. An added bonus
there
is that our email inbox doesn't get tied up because the conversation is over here in the tool.
Yeah, yep. Great point. And you won't miss things, right? You'll just miss an email or two that comes through. Yeah.
Or people who weren't included on the email trail, they still get to see the history of the conversation.
That's right. Yeah. So for those of you that are watching us live, I've seen people from Switzerland, UK, South Africa, the United States. We are live. Ask your questions and we will get to them. Jen, you made an analogy earlier when we were talking about it, right?
Yeah.
Tossing the ping pong ball?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you do see that email ping pong, right? Oh, no, here, can you do this? Oh, no, here, you do this. What does a good BA do with that email, though? Right, they're going to grab it, and they're going to do something with it.
Yep.
So let's move on to the next part of requirements management. Confirm requirements. Let's talk about
Yes. The piece that very often, I think, gets missed. We have those initial meetings. We document all our stuff. We categorize everything. But do we go back and validate? I've got my notes written down. Do we go back and validate that we've captured that business need correctly in that requirement? And we want to make sure when it's that stakeholder requirements is the correct IABA term. But when we're speaking with our stakeholders, they often understand it as business. If we explain it that it's a business requirement, they understand this isn't the how, this is the why, right? This is what I'm needing and why I need it. Getting that confirmed, that's step one. Then we're ready to start working through more of the details and to giving it to the development team or the team that's going to consume those requirements but it's really important that we close that circle.
Yeah, when I've been coaching BAs through how do you confirm those requirements, some people say, oh, you just send an email and say, yes, I approve. In practice, I find that might work for something very small, but when you get into medium or large, the practice that I encourage people to go through is a structured walkthrough. And that is set up a meeting with the stakeholders, say, we're going to spend an hour together. Here is the document. My expectation is you're going to read this and prepare your questions before the meeting. And that preparation is key. In the meeting, we're going to go through section by section and look for feedback. What that allows for is physically in a room or digitally in a room, having dialogue. Someone says, I didn't quite understand this. And people can talk about that.
Right.
It's very different than just sending something and asking people to respond to it. So a structured walkthrough, I found, is a quality way to make sure all your stakeholders are on the same page and they're ready to approve it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's one phrase that no BA should ever, ever say. And that is, I'll take silence as agreement. No. Silence does not equal agreement. Silence usually equals somebody doesn't understand something.
Or they didn't read it.
Or they don't agree with it. So silence is exactly the opposite of agreement. I actually had a group that we would meet with regularly, and they got to know me pretty well because there were several different stakeholders from different areas. And I used to say to them, I'm not moving on until I have at least three people respond. Oh. And by the end of it, they would say, come on, guys, someone else has to talk. Jen needs three of us.
Yeah, you know, I find this is also a skill, right? How do you as the BA encourage engagement? Because many times this confirmation, this validation activity is, I hate to say this, it's like it's a milestone on a project schedule somewhere, right? Did you get approval? And really, it's more than just did somebody sign on the line and say, yeah, this is what I wanted. But what you're really wanting to get to here is, do we have consensus? Do we all agree that this is how we are moving forward with this thing? And you sometimes have to be creative with stakeholders to get them to really engage.
Yeah. And let's also remember, this isn't the 90s, right? We're not waiting for a full BRD and then walking through that and putting people to sleep. We're doing it requirement by requirement, right? Or user story by user story. We're getting that validation as soon as things are ready to get validation. Then you're not overwhelming people with these huge, okay, we're going to watch all of the Harry Potter movies today, right?
That's right. And I need for you all to be alert and tell me at the end, yes, you approve. Yes. That's a good analogy. Yeah. And you know what? I have also found that sometimes just the written documents, so we might store our requirements as structured data and then put them into some other format that looks more like a document. But writing for these stakeholders is also a really important part of getting engagement when you are getting stakeholders to confirm them. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes if I have encountered something that has a lot of legs to it, so maybe there's something with a lot of decisions, I might default to, instead of trying to write a document with all of this, maybe picking a model that will better represent those requirements. And even though that might be additional work, I have found that sometimes those models will say a whole lot more than your document will. What do you guys think about that? Models as part of requirements.
There's 1,000 words.
Yeah.
It's probably worth more than 1,000 words.
Yeah. And if it can encourage people to have a conversation and like really start to envision this thing that you're telling them that they're going to get, I think that the level of conversation is very different.
I think it also engages those that are visual learners. So you've got something that's not just written down, but a graphical representation that they can more readily understand. Yeah, I like models. I also like analogies. You know, sometimes people have a hard time getting their head wrapped around something. So I was working on a project where in Canada, we're bilingual, French and English, and we were going from English service to a bilingual. And I was trying to communicate this to people that were not in Canada, and they were having a hard time understanding it. So I literally had a cereal box from that country. It was in English, and a cereal box exactly the same from Canada that was English on one side, French on the other. And I said, the contents is exactly the same. It's the packaging that's different. And that's all we're doing in this project. And all of a sudden, the light bulbs went, oh, okay, I get it.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
So you have to be creative sometimes. Maybe we don't think of ourselves as being creative, but creativity can help when you are managing requirements.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I find too, like if I'm trying to get information or get a response on something, maybe it's something that I don't have a model for because I'm really just trying to understand the business need around it. Tables are a great way to, here's what I understand. Put your comments in the column to the right, or, I mean, however we want to do that, but think about visually how things look if you are needing to send it as an email or you're sharing your screen, whatever. Think about how it looks. How would you, if you knew nothing about it, would it make sense to you?
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about finding those requirements, organizing the requirements, confirming the requirements. Let's talk about the life cycle of a requirement.
You know, I couldn't remember what was next, so... So life cycle, this is your requirement starts at the very beginning when you're starting to do those interviews, and it doesn't end until value is delivered and people are using the new solution. I think quite often there's that old school mindset of I've done my requirements, I've confirmed they're right, I send the ping pong ball over the wall. And now it's up to the development team. But no, really, that requirement is now, it's traced to everything. It's traced to your test cases. It's traced to test cases that are traced to defects. We want to make sure that we are staying on top of that, and we are watching and ensuring that that business need that was defined in the beginning is what's being delivered in the end. That there hasn't been a change in meaning or a misunderstanding somewhere along the way. So it's keeping on top of it and keeping an eye on that all the way through from the time that it comes in as a potential requirement all the way through to it's been tested, it's been validated, it's been developed, it's been delivered to the testing team, it's been UATs complete, and the business has agreed that it's delivered what they wanted or needed.
And you know, maybe not everybody thinks of a requirement as having a life cycle, but I think this is a really important concept that's part of the requirement management knowledge area, because they don't necessarily live on. And heck, sometimes requirements that come in the door you don't do anything with. You might archive them, or they might be deleted or put on hold. When you are tracing them in some kind of a tool, whatever that tool is, it gives you the opportunity to see where that is. And if you've traced it all the way through to test cases and defects, you also have a sense of, as that requirement changes, then what else has to change? So I think life cycles are maybe another thing that we don't think a whole lot about.
I agree. And there's also another piece that we don't often think about either, and that's the business rule that requirement is meeting. So the business rules live on beyond after the requirement is signed off and delivered. It's meeting a particular business rule. If that business rule changes, guess what? All of those requirements that were previously delivered, we need to look at those right. To see, do we need new requirements to accommodate the new business rule?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's definitely dynamic. It's not a static environment.
Yeah, that's why I think having these in Word documents often obscures the fact that the pieces can change. So having it somewhere where you can manage this metadata about a requirement really helps you to see everything. I tell you what, do we have any more of these topics? Because we have tons of questions today.
Uh-oh. Yeah, let's dig into the questions. I've actually just taken a quick peek at LinkedIn and starting to see some requests for some ping pong balls. So I'll put that banner back up there as a reminder. If people want to send over your mailing address, we can get one to you. But yeah, let's dig into some questions.
Yeah, and Roslyn has shared our LinkedIn information in both LinkedIn and YouTube. So if you are looking for that, you can find it there, or Roslyn might drop it in again. All right, so I'm just going to take these in order, and some are questions, some are comments. Anyway, here we go. All right, first question is from Darla. So we were talking about SharePoint. Can you store requirements in Confluence? So I thought we might get this question right, because Confluence is technically, it's like a content management system. I have done it. Have you guys worked with Confluence for requirements management?
Not so much for the requirements management piece, but maybe for documenting some of the details of those requirements. Confluence quite often is associated with Jira. Jira is a great tool for managing the requirements. And then you can link to Confluence if there is additional detail that doesn't fit as well into the Jira structure. But I would say, I mean, if you don't have access to Jira, if you're going to use Confluence, use it properly. Dig in and get some basics on the tips and tricks that are out there on the best use of it. Because tools are great as long as they're used properly.
Yeah, and Confluence can end up being just as confusing as a Word document, to be honest with you. Atlassian, who is the owner of that product, they've got lots of free training and newsletters and things, so check that out. They probably also have tips for how to use it as a requirements tool. So the next tool here, share more details on a SharePoint project tracker. Well, that would be a whole other talk. But I'll let you take it.
Sure. I can talk a little bit about what I've done with SharePoint in the past. Now, SharePoint has evolved, so there's probably more and more that we can do with it. But what I have done, using it as a requirements management. So I'm not talking the project tracker piece of it, but just the requirements management piece. So I created a list, a SharePoint list with custom fields. And some of the information that I shared earlier in terms of what you want to track with your requirement, each of those becomes a separate column in that list. And I'm using SharePoint terminology here. Some people may refer to it as a field if it was another tool. But then I also have anything like a status or a priority. Those columns are going to be dropdowns, because I want to make sure that everything's consistent, that if we're changing the status of something, there's not a space in one word and an S at the end of another one. Same with the category. So we want to use dropdowns as much as possible. But it's, I guess to summarize it, it's a SharePoint list is what I would use. And that gives you the ability to track comments and things on that, on each list item. The other benefit with it, as opposed to a document, is that multiple people can be working in different areas at the same time. You don't have to worry about checking in and checking out of documents.
Yeah,
it also has a version history that you can turn on for a list,
yes,
so that you can see the history of changes. So it's a really, but that's what tools like SharePoint, this LinkedIn user has used Smartsheet also, mm-hmm, kind of, it's a, yep, similar tool that allows you, again, it's all about structured data. So you can use those lists and columns and fields. You can use those in ways to create the data that you want to use to track. This LinkedIn user is from Ireland. Hello.
Yeah. But they are Spanish.
They are Spanish.
Hola.
And what we sometimes get a question about is, what's the best tool? I think the answer for that is, use the tool your organization uses internally. So don't seek out something else because someone else has seen it. Use the tools that are within the suite and report that.
Yeah. And there is no one size fits all tool. It depends on your project and how you need to track your requirements. There's guidelines that we're giving, but you know your project better than anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I think when you start to think of requirements in a structured way, and it helps you to seek out the tools that are available to you in your organization. And also what I found is that you get called on to do this for other projects as well. So be careful what you ask for, because if you get known for this, you'll be asked to do it more. So the next question, so we were talking about prioritizing requirements. How do you organize them? And so I know we talked about a Moscow technique. So Aruna is asking, are there alternative techniques for organizing requirements? And I think requirement priorities aside from Moscow.
So that's a great question. Moscow, I mean, you can organize them into those four different buckets, but and for those who don't know it, Moscow stands for must have, should have, could have, and won't have. I actually change the W when I'm working with stakeholders and looking for priorities. And I call it nice to have, because if they see won't have, then they see their requirement tagged as a won't have, and then they get upset. So I call them nice to have.
Good point.
But I would actually not use that as the way of categorizing and organizing requirements. That's a way of kind of filtering through when you're doing your release planning and determining which requirements need to be developed first. For organizing them, I would tend to group them more by, maybe it's by business area, maybe it's by functional area in the system. You might have multiple categories depending on how you want to, how you're going to be meeting with your stakeholders, how you're going to be delivering them. One example might be if I've got a development team that's focused only on UI stuff, maybe I've got a development category for requirements. But I've got a stakeholder group that's dealing with legislation. So I might have a separate category for legislation. So it really kind of depends on your particular project and how the teams are set up and how you're going to be using the requirements.
Yeah, it's important to know and to have some discussions about what are the properties of requirements that you want to track and need to track, because you could even go as far as building in fields that help you to do some metrics around your requirements as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So very helpful. All right. So here's another question. This is from Elena, maybe. How do you handle when stakeholders continuously change their requirements? Having used a sign-off before, but are there any tips? And this is a cultural thing of disorganization, although I'm not sure it's a disorganization. I think it's just human nature, but that's okay.
And maybe in some cases it might have to do with how detailed your requirements are. If when we're thinking on those business needs, we're not looking solution yet. So it really comes down to what are we trying to achieve with this requirement? So, here we go, pulling an analogy out of my hat. But let's say we're building a car. We're not necessarily going to have a business requirement for it must be 3.5 horsepower. I don't even know if that's a real number. But it might be, must be able to drive at least 100 kilometers per hour. There's my Canadian coming out. but is the business, what's the business need in that case? If I'm only using this car to drive around the block, maybe it doesn't need to go 100 kilometers. Maybe the business need is I need a car that can take me around the block. So we just want to be careful that we're not too detailed on our stakeholder and our business level of requirements.
Ah, yes. And appropriateness of detail for where you are. Yeah, in the project. Maybe that could be one reason for continuously changing. So here's another question. How do you deal with clients who refuse to respond to or read requirements?
Oh, that's a fun one. I book a meeting with them.
Yeah.
And or I phone them and explain to them why we need their input and explain that we are that and I basically it's building that relationship, and I let them know I'm your advocate. So if you want your needs to be met in this system, I'm the one who's going to speak for you. So I need to understand what you need, and then I can advocate for you and make sure that your needs are delivered in the right priority.
Yeah. And Susan often mentions that we're in a relationship business, and that's exactly what this is. It's a challenging relationship that requires some investment.
Getting
to know the person, what's important to them, you know, where their key concerns are. What did they do on the weekend? You know,
exactly.
Really get to know who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is classic resistance. And if we were to put on our change manager hat for a moment, we would say, what are the ways, you know, what are the ways that somebody could resist change? Because that's many times what's happening here. This person, it's not that they're just, they don't want to read another document. Maybe they don't, but there's usually a why that they're resisting. Yes. And that will only ever be resolved with a conversation where you really talk about what's going on. So I do think it's important to have a little bit of a resistance management plan for when you are trying to get your requirements confirmed. Just because you'll encounter all kinds of reasons that people don't want to confirm them.
Right. Right. And I think you nailed that one with the why, understanding the why. Is it because they're just not the type of person that reads a big document, would rather have a meeting, or do they truly not have the time? Are they even the right person?
Yeah, that's true. And having that conversation will help you to understand any of those reasons. And you know, because it really, once you've given them a document, you will likely have to follow up. And that follow up will probably look like a conversation. So that was a good question. Where I think we are just about at the end of our time today. I was going to see if there was maybe another question that would be here. Maybe we can answer this one really quickly. How often do you use or reference the Babok guide for these activities?
Well, if I was at home, you would see the Babok guide is right there. And I know you guys both have yours handy because just before we went live, It's a common.
Are you going to tattle on us?
I'm going to tell on you, and I'm going to tell on myself. There's two words in the BABOK: validate and verify your requirements. And I get confused which is which when we're trying to deal with the right terminology. Doesn't really matter in the end, as long as you are doing some form of confirming with your stakeholders and making sure that your requirement has the right level of detail. But when you're trying to get the specific terminology, yeah, you reach for the BABOK. May reach for it just for, yeah, what other techniques could we use? Let's see what we can find in there. I tend to use the electronic version online, though.
Yep. So you can use the Knowledge Hub. That's right. And the Knowledge Hub has additional detail that you can use that kind of wraps around these knowledge areas as well. So, you know, I have often found that I go to the Babok guide when folks have questions about requirements management, and I want to make sure that I am giving them an answer that will help them to make sense of what we are, because requirements management does take a little bit of time, but when you set it up, you will find that the requirements management is so much more smoother. I don't know if that's a word. Anyway, smoothly? I don't know. But it really does. If you make the investment in tracking them, you will get all of that back with speed and efficiency and accuracy and metrics, which we don't often talk about, and traceability. There's just so many good things that can come of requirements management. So there you are.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Jen, for joining us today. This little bouncy ball that we've got here, you're going to get one at BBC next week. You'll get to hear all about that. That's pretty exciting. So thank you for joining us today and sharing your wisdom with our audience. We really appreciate that. We'll leave a link to your LinkedIn profile in the YouTube video description, so people can reach out to you if they want to.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys.
I'll see you next week.
Yes.
In Orlando.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And we want to thank everyone for joining us today. And in 2 weeks, boy, we've got another exciting announcement to make. We will have Angela Wick and Tim Coventry here to talk about their brand new book. It's called Future Proof. I already have my copy. You can get it from Amazon, by the way. Amplifying Agility with AI and Insightful Business Analysis. We are really excited to hear where do they think AI and business analysis are headed. You'll want to listen in for that. So 2 weeks from today, thank you all so much for joining us. Bye-bye. This is the end of our live session, but if you've got questions, you can send us an email at live@iiba.org or leave us a voice message and we'll answer your question at one of our upcoming broadcasts. Join us.